now 6 o'clock. We'll be calling our work session for June 12th with the Planning Commission to order at this time. First order of business will be the Pledge of Allegiance, followed by a moment of silence. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. The next item of business will be the planning director's comments.
Mr. Chairman, I just have one item of report. Mr. Newman, our planner for the past 2.5 years, has found employment as a zoning administrator of the city of Fredericksburg, and his last day with us will be July 13th.
We'll miss you. Congratulations.
Thank you. Well, got him for one more meeting after this.
Ms. Costalesso is leaving. This is her last meeting, and then next month will be his last meeting.
Yeah.
So wish
good luck.
Much success, but he'll need a lot of luck.
Yes.
For that title.
The next item is a public comment section during our work session. Limited 3 minutes per speaker. Anybody wanted to come forward, speak at this time, you will be limited 3 minutes. Seeing no one coming forward, we will end the public comment section and we will move right into our work session about home occupations. Mr. Robinson.
All right, we're going to try to pick up where we left off. We had a discussion last month on our current definition and some regulations we're trying to add into the ordinance. We got some ideas from you. So we're back tonight to show you what additionally we've come up with. So
I might have to press the space bar.
So just to recap, this is our current definition. And the words that are highlighted in red are meant to show the current issues that we address for home occupations. So we say that there's 4 key issues dealing with display. And just to clarify, that's the display of products, not signage. Talking about there is no display, which is display of goods and products. The second issue is no one is employed other than members of the family. The third issue being no substantial increase in traffic. And then the fourth issue being the gross floor area, which we currently limit to 25% for everything. So that's our current definition and the 4 issues the zoning ordinance addresses. What we would like to do, instead of having our regulations for home occupations in the definition, we want to try to separate it out and just have a definition that just simply defines what home occupation is, and then have the standards elsewhere in the ordinance. So the definition on the screen just simply defines it as accessory use of a dwelling or an accessory structure, and that's key. Right now it's confined to just the dwelling, so this is making it a little bit more flexible. So an accessory use of a dwelling unit and or an accessory structure for gainful employment involving the production, provision, or sale of goods and or services, which is clearly incidental or secondary to the residential use of a parcel. Now the next sentence, as you remember, that was part of the definition we were proposing last time. We're keeping that in there because we do plan to come back to you for accessory homestays after we get through this process. But that sentence, which talks about the rental of rooms to tourists, that will get into a regulating accessory homestays, another term for Airbnbs. And then the last sentence just says that they have to be conducted in accordance with all federal, state, and local laws. So this is the definition we would propose. And then in addition to that, we're still having the same two definitions you saw previously, except we referred to them as type 1 and type 2. Now we're just going to refer to them as minor and major home occupations. So basically, minor home occupations is just saying there that they're more suited for the more densely areas of the county. The major ones are more suitable for the agricultural and rural areas of the county. So I just want to make that clear to the commission. That's not making it stricter, just adding a option to have a major and minor, specifying what areas they go in. So if we go with those definitions, then we would have some standards in another section of the ordinance, which would need to be yet determined. So on the screen now, the first paragraph, I think, is just that would be a lead-in paragraph to the standards. It's just talking about how you recognize that there are certain activities that are appropriate or could be appropriate to be conducted within residential dwellings as a commercial use. And you talk about how it should be subordinate to the residential use. And then it would go into the standards, which we're going to go through on the following screens. So there's three standards there on that screen there. The first one talks about how, now these are general standards, so these would apply to all home occupations. Everyone would have to meet these standards. So the first one, it doesn't limit the number of home occupations you could do at the dwelling. It says you can do as many as you want to, as long as you don't exceed that maximum percentage. The second one talks about outside storage of goods and products being prohibited unless it's expressly permitted. The third one prohibits toxic, explosive, flammable, radioactive, hazardous materials. So that's more of a safety issue there. The fourth one states that uses that are specifically permitted in the industrial districts, I-1 and I-2, are not permitted as a home occupation. The fifth standard talks about the sale of products from the dwelling unit or the accessory structure is permitted. So if someone has a product that they sell, it would be okay to have them sell that from their home or the accessory structure. Six talks about lessons in the applied arts would be permitted. And then it gives a maximum class size at any one time or the number permitted in one single day. So that, for example, would be put in place for someone, let's say they give piano lessons from their home and they have students over at a time, that standard would be put in to try to cover that. And then I'm sure there's many other examples out there too. Seven talks about signage, it has to comply with the county code and specific to Article 15, which is our signage regulations.
Can I have a question on number six? Say for instance, you talked about piano lessons. So suppose somebody was giving artist painting lessons. Would that five students at one time apply?
That's probably still open for discussion.
Because that looked like that might be, because sometimes I've known in the past, talking to people that have been like maybe as many as 10 and so forth like that. So,
And this is language that we've taken directly from another county. So if you all feel the need to adjust the numbers, that would certainly be fine with staff.
You also need to maybe think about people that are giving lessons. Sometimes we'll do a couple times a year a recital where they'll have several of their students there at once with people. So, you need to provide for that. And I've some ordinances do provide for that.
Okay.
What does the zoning ordinance say about signs related to home occupations?
We currently have a provision in the A1 district. And then the residential districts, R1, R2, R4, we give the number allowed per parcel and then a maximum area and a maximum height.
What's the maximum area and height for?
So in the A1, which is the agricultural zoning, Home occupation signs can be 12 square feet in A1. And in residential districts, it can be 9 square feet.
So that's...
It's pretty big.
Well, 12 square feet is less than half a sheet of plywood.
Yeah, but I mean, thinking for a residential district.
3 by 3. Yeah, for residential, it might be 3 by 3 might be a little big. 3 by 4 really isn't.
And part of the point of a home occupation is it's supposed to be sort of invisible. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, if I'm driving down the street and seeing all these signs, you know, that's.
I've worked with ordinances that are as strict as 4 square feet.
I've seen 1 square foot. Even.
Yeah. Well, I was
or no,
something.
Or none.
When he said 12 square feet, if you took you could have a 1 foot this way and 12 foot this long, so you could have a.
Right, but that's unlikely. I'm just trying
to. You have
to
look at it as if everybody in the subdivision is going to have a home occupation.
Exactly. And I think so 9 square feet does seem big. And I was thinking more like, you know, on my way home, I always see a lady over on. She's probably still in Louise because she's a notary, so she's got a little notary. Uh-huh. Notary public or something, and that's clearly that's
we
hanging
could,
from a mailbox.
One
think.
Specific to a number specific to major and minor, that's separate from our sign regulations. Mm-hmm. That's the direction the commission wants to go.
I think it should be a little smaller than that because I think that some of those would be kind of large. Because I see, like, I know in my neighborhood, and I don't think she's doing it anymore. She used to have little signs that says seamstress, mm-hmm. and it was only like this big, right. but you could see it.
And I don't think it's to capture drive-by traffic.
Right.
You know, this is supposed to be a destination, just to help people find it, maybe.
Yeah.
But, so I think you need to be smaller.
Yeah, you certainly don't want a neighborhood turning into Las Vegas or anything either. So it's, but people do have a need to.
And non-lighted, maybe.
Especially in a rural area where you're trying to.
I don't know, you may think about the lighting issue on it.
A business is not kind of an isolated area. That's little signs do help.
And what about would something like that neon signs and that type of thing, or?
Right now, I think we have a list of signs that are prohibited, and I don't think something like that would be allowed.
I didn't think so yeah. either, but.
But those are existing provisions, so we would have to do an amendment to the sign regulations as well as the other applicable sections of the ordinance. If you want to make the signage smaller.
I think for this purpose, they should be smaller.
So I think that's what number 7 was saying, that it complies with Article 15. So it looks like an amendment to Article 15 might will be necessary as well. And then General Standard 8 talks about noise. And the hours on the screen, again, that was taken from another county. If you all want to change that, we're certainly open. But that's on the screen, it's just saying that no activity in conjunction with a home occupation would be allowed before 7 a.m. or after 10 p.m.
And no matter what, it has to comply with the noise ordinance.
Well, exactly.
So that should be sufficient.
And I mean, you can be potting in your studio at 3 in the morning if that's your shtick, as long as it doesn't impact or disturb adjoining neighbors.
Yes.
I think the other one was some discussion of how many students for these applied arts things. I think Barry's right that, I mean, I know. You know, one of the businesses that kind of brought this to our attention, Ms. Custer, I'm sure that she would like to have more than 5.
She was having upwards of around 8.
8 or 10 kids. And that's not a disturbance.
Okay.
And that's sort of a really quiet type thing, you know?
Right.
So if we were to amend the proposed text to 10, is that what the commission would agree on?
That's what I think.
Because we could do 8 if you wanted to.
I think 10 is.
And then you feel that there would need to be a provision for like special occasions such as recitals?
I've just seen where they'll say no more than 2 or 3 times a year they can have a gathering of students and
parents
and that sort of thing, you know.
Yes.
So that they're not doing it every week, but that you can do that once in a while. So they don't run afoul of that.
Right.
is the idea.
And then there's one more standard, general standard that would apply to all home occupations. This one is saying basically that in the dwelling would need to remain of a residential nature. So it says the operation of the home occupation shall not be permitted to significantly exceed, expand, or alter the residential nature of the dwelling. And then so the first one talks about the color, material, construction, or lighting of the exterior. And that's the dwelling unit or the accessory structure. The second item talks about parking and type and volume of traffic, including commercial deliveries and pickups. Third item talks about the demand for water and sewer services. And then the fourth item talks about vibration, glare, fumes, odor, or electrical interference. Basically saying that home occupations shouldn't increase or bring attention to these items. And again, that was language taken from another county. Is there any concern over those items? Okay. So, in addition to home occupations, then we would have a definition for minor home occupation, and then these would be the standards associated with a minor home occupation. So we're specifying, instead of just having a 25% area across the board for all home occupations, that would be removed, and now we're specifying that there would be a difference between major and minor. So for minor, we're saying that there would be a maximum of 10% of the finished area of the dwelling unit. And then there's a provision, which we currently don't have, that 5% can be utilized towards storage. Minor home occupations, you would not be allowed to employ anyone other than people that live at the dwelling. Keep it in mind, minor home occupations are gonna be in your more dense areas where there are more people. So, I guess the point of this is to try to make sure you're limiting, you know, vehicle trips, employees, vehicles on the property, make sure you don't have a lot of employees parking there, et cetera. The third standard limits display or storage of goods or products, does not allow that in a minor home occupation. Minor home occupation would not permit advertisement of the home occupation through local media, such as telephone books, flyers, and the internet.
So would that mean that in a place that was only suitable for minor home occupation, they could not be Airbnb or something like that? Because that could be an excessive
restriction. Absolutely. I mean, I would think that would be a major home occupation, not a minor. I mean, that with this division.
Right, with this discussion. So is that something, is being an Airbnb a necessary restriction for a residential area? Not allowing that in a residential area, is it necessary? And it strikes me that maybe it's not, and that's why I brought it up. Because that's a pretty low impact.
Mm-hmm. Well, your point's well taken, but I think that goes back to an issue I had from the very beginning, which is that we have linked major and minor to the density of the area, and it really, to my thought, should be linked to the intensity of the use itself in any given area. You could have an Airbnb in, if it were permitted, in you know, a more intense area like Lake Monticello, and have it have no greater,
right.
But it would be a major home in terms of this. And you would closely monitor it to make sure it worked, you know, wasn't causing any other issues. But it might be perfectly appropriate there. Mm-hmm. It seems to me the major and minor can be in either agricultural or residential. It doesn't matter. It's just the intensity of the use and whether it's appropriate in that given location.
Mm-hmm. And wouldn't a business need some kind of advertising?
Yeah, I'm thinking that this provision may be a little bit outdated with the way the internet is these days.
A lot of folks. For example, if you're working from home, you're an independent consultant and you're working from home, you're a home inspector and you go out and do your business, mm-hmm. you come home, you write your thing. You're not advertising your address. You're not doing any of that stuff. If you're an IT consultant, same thing. Yeah, those are minor. To me, it's more major if you're letting people know there's a business here and to come. So normally, I've seen minor that don't have signage, that are very limited like this, and the others are more major because they have those impacts.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, let me ask a couple questions. With number four, since we're talking about that, is say for instance, I got a business and I made these signs out of pallets, which is becoming a big thing right now, and where they put on them these sayings or something like that or whatever, and I've been seeing them being advertised on Facebook. Facebook also has an advertising section, a lot of people do. Also, say for instance, I was an artist and I sold a lot of my products on the internet. I did paintings and I advertised on the internet and I sold. Looking at that, that would not be allowed, although I did my work in my home doing my painting and stuff like that. Would I even, you know, and 9 times out of 10, would not even know about it.
In my opinion, our proposed regulations would probably be more sufficient for our purposes of enforcement than, you know, whether someone's advertising in the local media. People in the neighborhood are going to notice if, you know, 50 cars come in and out during the day and they start throwing stuff outside, storing stuff outside and things of that nature, more than whether somebody's doing jewelry sales or, you know multi-level marketing and they're like, have their home address on their business card. It's not, it's not an issue.
Like you talk about, a lot of people make jewelry and sell it. Basically, they sell it and ship it out. There, a lot of people don't even come to their home. I know some people that do paintings and sell paintings for quite a big amount of money, and you know the way that they picture it on a site on the internet, and people order it or contract with them to do it. So.
And a lot of these home occupations are more niche-oriented, so they have a specific market, which is not like, you know, everyone's going to be beating down the doors to come to a subdivision anyway.
Right.
In most cases.
I think the intent of that regulation was just to try to prohibit from advertising it like a commercial establishment, like any other storefront.
But you may also get into free speech issues. If Fred was here, he might say that.
Yeah, I think we have to allow people in today's age advertise their product.
Because if you really think about it,
or flyer,
putting a sign outside is actually advertising.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know.
I don't think it's that useful to us as far as enforcement as the other items. It puts a new burden on the businesses.
I agree.
I get irritated if I go into the Yellow Pages and I can't find the business that I know is it there. It's like, you know, I know this is an antiquated way to look up a telephone number, but I still use it.
Okay, so
to get you out,
sounds like
21st century.
Yeah. And our goal is to make it easier for entrepreneurs at home, not put undue burdens on them. And I think that means
I think we need to take the four out.
And then the fifth standard on the screen talks about the percentage of an accessory building that could be used as part of a home occupation and limits it to 10%. Are there any concerns?
I think it depends on what they're doing, you know, as to how much space you need. Mm-hmm. And why would we care if it's inside the house?
Well, I've seen a lot of ordinances do 25%. 10% is fairly restrictive. It's, you know, 25% is clearly subordinate to its primary use as a residence.
So if you have a 1,200 square feet, 10% would be 120 square feet.
Yeah.
And to Mrs. Catalese's point earlier about the intensity of use, I'm not sure how much of the space I use for my business truly correlates to the intensity of use. If I just I have a lot of pallets stored because I paint a lot of pallets and make signs. That could take a lot of space because one pallet's pretty big.
But it's not toxic or creating noise.
And right, all they are is just stored there until I can get around to painting an American flag on them or whatever I do. That seems... So I'm not sure that, yeah.
And if I had said pallets sitting there inside my house, would anybody know what they were for?
Well, that's true. But if you had a stack 10 feet tall, maybe we'd question that. But so I'm, and like you say, 25%, clearly this is a subordinate use of this home because I'm living here, I'm cooking here, I'm living here, I'm watching TV, I'm doing whatever. So.
And another thing too, person, some of this stuff, like for a person that does jewelry work, they may have a room they work in at times, but they also might want to, at night when they're watching television, they may be sitting in the living room doing that too. So, you know, and if
we're going to go out and get them.
That's what my wife does. She makes jewelry,
yeah,
spread out all over the house whenever she's working.
Yeah. Well, that's very standard.
In the garage, bedroom, dining room table.
So do you want to increase it to 25% for all home occupations? Or Because
this is in the minor.
I would suggest that.
Right now we have a definition that talks about 25% for all home occupations. This language we took from another county. So
yeah, I would bump
we just
it.
Thought it would be good to have a discussion if that number wanted you to change or not.
Yeah. So it sounds like you're not in agreement with
it. We're not, as a staff, having issues with the four area being utilized. We're not having that.
I don't think that's not going to be an impact on the neighbors. The impact on the neighbors is 50 cars coming there every day.
Let me ask you a question.
Or I'm cooking stuff outside all day. You know, those are going to be the kind of things that impact.
Since you've been here, how many complaints have you had about home occupation? Any?
Probably two or three.
What kind of occupation? Do you remember what they were?
Yeah, honestly, I don't think it's been any since James and Brad have been here. I remember Steve Tugwell and Scott Miller had one.
We've had some where people got their auto body shop into, you know, they were basically doing that as a home occupation, and so they got their SUP so they could do that. I remember some of those. And
we had complaints in a subdivision where a guy was doing, I guess he was in the construction business, but he was parking his vehicles.
Oh, yeah.
Out front, large vehicles. That seemed to be that was one of the first complaints we got here. But that
was that the one on Salem Church Road, 616.
I was thinking it was closer to. It was past the roundabout. It was somewhere out past Turkey Sag. Okay. I'm not exactly sure where.
Okay, that was just
it's very minimal, and usually it has to do with vehicles, and not even storage. It's mainly just vehicles.
Not even really the occupation. It's just the storage more.
Because most people tend to know what their neighbors are up to, and most don't have a problem with a lot of stuff. And we don't go out looking for trouble. We're complaint driven. Trouble finds us.
Okay.
So the thing is, I guess based on the screen, we would remove 4 and 5 if we're just going to make it 25% across the board for all home occupations. I mean, that would probably need to be put under the general standards.
And I would say the same thing for number 1.
On the
backup minor. 1.
Can
backup.
You go back 1?
I mean, wouldn't you?
I think the point of the regulations from the county we took it from, they were just trying to distinguish between major and minor. But
I say, if we change this to 25%, I don't know why we wouldn't eliminate 1 and 5 both, because
now there's a distinction here though, because 1 says you can't use more than 10 or 25% of the dwelling, and 5 is the accessory building. Mm-hmm. Now, what if somebody wants to use the entire accessory building as a potting studio, for example? If that says 25%, they can't do that. So that I think we need to be aware of that.
No, the bottom one says if an accessory is used, the aggregate can't be more than 10%. You can use the whole accessory building.
But the whole thing,
okay,
between
so
the house
total floor area and the structure
and
dwelling.
And we're changing that to 25%.
Right, but you can still use the entire accessory building, which doesn't, doesn't seem to be
absolutely
a problem. Yeah, I understand. Yeah.
So we need to work on number one as well as four and five. So.
Right.
So four would be removed.
Yep.
You want to increase the percentages in one and five to 25%?
I mean, I don't have a problem with that person.
Now, that's a storage of goods in the 5 and 10%. That's not the actual occupation.
Well, the 5% is storage.
Yeah.
But I mean, why would we make a distinction about the space used for the business and how much they're using for storage? Why, again, because if you had, if the pallet guy, storage might be a greater percentage of your use area,
okay,
just storing pallets.
That's fine.
Because I think we've covered all, you know, the issues with stuff stored. Is it hazardous? Is it toxic? Is it likely to leak? And that's all covered in the other general provisions you had.
Mm-hmm. So you'd strike the second sentence of one and make the first sentence 25.
Or we take it out of here and put it in the general provisions because
right,
we're making them easy.
Right.
Not, it's not unique to the minor occupations. Yeah.
Going back to you, he was talking about the hazardous material. Suppose I had a business where I reloaded shells.
Sounds hazardous.
Power.
Sounds hazardous to me.
I would say that's hazardous, and I think...
And if I lived next door to you, I'd want to know.
And it's not unreasonable to make them jump through some more hoops if they're going to have something truly hazardous. I think the same might be said for somebody who's at home making soap. If they're buying high quantities of lye, and I have good friends who do that, but they had to go through some hoops with the city of Suffolk to get the right stuff.
So, in that same line, if I was a person and I had a license to sell guns, could I do that at my house?
Sure.
Yes.
Okay, I just want to make sure because...
What usually happens is the ATF gives us a call.
Yeah.
And we do a zoning verification form for them, and you know, you have to meet the applicable standards, whether you know, foot traffic and all that stuff. But that's some home occupation ordinances prohibit firearms, but that's not, we're not proposing that.
Well, and those people are going to be a whole lot more regulation than Jason.
Oh yeah, well I know a little bit about that because
Jason's going to be the least of their problems as far as regulation. They're going to
we're usually
all kinds of people looking at them.
We're usually the first person to go to because we're the easiest to get through.
And when I was in the retail business, I was one of the designated people that sold guns, and I had to go get fingerprinted and all of that type of stuff. And I'm one of the ones that had to call it in and stuff like that.
Usually how it works is the ATF's calling us before the person even gets off the phone with them almost. And then the person who's applying will call us and we'll go, yeah, we already heard from the ATF.
And the ATF is very strict because we lost our license because we forget the middle initial.
That is strict.
Yeah. Watch it, Beth.
Some hunters make their own bullets and shotgun shells.
But if they do it for themselves, that's personal.
Right.
And there's people who restore old firearms, antique firearms, and things like that.
But that's probably not hazardous material because they're not reloading and gunpowder and all that kind of stuff. So that's more craftsman.
Yeah,
but
that's
could,
different
could,
than a
you
blacksmith.
You could blowing yourself up somehow. So if you don't know what you're doing.
Okay.
Well, I just have a question to make sure I'm clear. For number five about the accessory buildings, did you want to allow people to use the entire accessory building?
I think that would end up happening if someone had a garage and they wanted to store some of the pallets in there and maybe set up their painting. Very possible that they could use the
garage. As long as it's like
and we
not
wouldn't know it.
Outdoor storage or like for drawing attention, I think it's an issue.
I'd rather it be stored inside the accessory building.
Yeah, rather
next to the accessory building.
And Scott Miller out there with a yardstick trying to looking at their house dimensions.
And like Ms. Cotzalesa was talking about, if say somebody did potting of plants, you probably wouldn't want to have that inside the house.
Yeah.
you probably won't have that in the accessory building. But still, that 25% would apply, but you know.
It keeps it subordinate to the residential use.
Okay. Okay, so for major home occupations, they were proposing to allow 25% of the finished area. Again, it looks like that would become a general standard. And then we would remove the sentence about the 10% of the area for storage. And then the major home occupations would allow one person who is not a resident to be employed with the home occupation. So that's the difference between that and a minor. Minor doesn't allow any employees, where this one would allow one. And then the last item talks about, it's already the 25% for accessory buildings, but we would need to adjust that and just make it the same for all. So I guess potentially if we threw this on the screen right now, we would only have one standard for major home occupations.
I don't know if the one person only is makes sense or not, but it sounds fine to me. I don't have anything to judge it by.
Mm-hmm. I've seen on major home occupation standards, certainly the employee is a big one. Mm-hmm. But it's usually not the only difference between a major and a minor. So there's usually a difference in things like signage permitted. You might be able to have a sign with one or not with the other, or a bigger one or not, you know, with the other. Again, drawing people to the site. If on a minor home occupation you're going to say, okay, you can have a 2-square-foot sign, you might have a 9-square-foot sign available on a major, something like that. You know, you might
want to be covered under the sign part of this, right? Which we've already
It sounds like we need to change that because our signage allows, it sounds like larger square footage,
right,
is what you prefer.
And I like that's one person. So if you start getting more than one person, you're getting into something that's more than a home occupation, as far as I'm concerned.
So everybody's comfortable with the one?
Yeah, I think so. Okay. Don't have anything to judge it by, but it makes sense.
That seems
to not going to prohibit you from having home-based business where your employees are off-site.
Right.
Correct.
So it's just mainly coming to the site. You don't want 15 people coming in, parking, going off to work somewhere.
And one seems to be the number used in a lot
of
this we've looked at.
Or like Silicon Valley, where people are working out of houses because it's too expensive to rent a commercial building, and they're all living there because it's too expensive to live in separate houses.
And they don't have to drive to come to work.
Yeah.
Well, we might need to do a little bit more research so we'll have more than just one standard for the major home occupations.
That's all we have.
Well, I mean, you could pull the signage for home occupations out of the signage and put them as standards for home occupations. Yeah. I think that would make sense.
Yeah.
Would also make it easier to find.
That's true.
Yeah. If it was all together.
So, I guess just to recap the issues that we would be regulating that we currently don't regulate. So, on the left side are the four issues that our definition currently addresses: display, employees, traffic, and third floor area. So standards we'd be adding to the ordinance would deal with the number of occupations permitted, outside storage, toxic materials, sale of products, permitted class size for lessons, signage, noise, residential nature of the home occupation. And that's the general standards. And based on the discussion, we'd be adding to the general standards the allowable area for dwelling units and accessory structures. Right now, I have this spelled out as one under minor home occupations and major, but we'd be moving that under general. And then in addition to that, no outside employees, no public display. We remove the no advertisement and the 10% limitation. So that's those screens, but just to kind of compare the issues we would start addressing. And then the next slide, to jump back to, if you go to the next slide, just to show what our definition of fine art studio is. I guess we still need to try to figure out how to reconcile this against home occupations. Right now, it requires a special use permit, and it's just basically a building, a portion thereof, that's used by an artist or sculptor or photographer. So we're not proposing to amend that at this time.
Does that not become a minor or major home occupation, depending on?
I think it would. We could possibly leave it in as a, if it exceeds the intensity of a home occupation.
Exceeds the square footage or something like that. So it could be both, depending on what it does.
I would think that has less impact than some of the other things we've talked about, and should be allowed by right.
That was a question we had last time. Do we want to continue requiring a special use permit for it, or consider an option like that?
In my opinion, it seems a little bit excessive for the nature of the inquiries we're getting.
Yeah.
That can be addressed through other ways of the ordinance. But
well, if you leave it in, you're going to have to, because it fights with a home occupation. So you're going to have to say something like, you know, that exceeds the limits of the home occupation may require a special use permit. But I don't see why you couldn't just remove it.
Yeah.
Why don't we just remove that? And it's a minor home occupation or a major, depending what it fits.
By right.
People shouldn't have to go through
that. What if they want to use a greater percentage of that space, though? Because, I mean, if you're a sculptor, I could see you using a lot of space to display things.
So in other words, you can probably put in the part of this, anything that exceeds this.
The parameters can come as a special use permit. Perfect.
Right.
That's a great idea.
And the bigger space you use, there's a possible correlation to traffic, to increase traffic and things like that. You're using more space, more things to sell, people to look at. I don't know.
You know, uses that go beyond the intensity that we've envisioned require a special use permit.
We have a few artists here. Do you want to ask them? Is that okay?
We can ask them a question. Does anybody want to make any comments about what we've talked about today? If this is pretty much in line with what y'all think and so forth like that. And I know that, you know, some of the things we make rules, but it does not apply when you have some things like homeowners association. So
yeah,
so
this doesn't do anything to that.
So the homeowner association supersedes our law?
No, they have to follow both.
Both.
The most intensive of either.
Well, we both don't lift the lake, so we represent what would be happening in the agricultural district. And I would recommend that the section 244.2.2 that suggests that fine art studios are required to have a special use permit should be eliminated, or as you say, add some language to the whole section that if it exceeds the requirements in the ordinance you just talked about, that a special use might be required. There's another conflict that you've created by the way you've worded the current version of the ordinance, because bed and breakfast could be construed to be like an Airbnb, and your present ordinance has kind of allowed that, but the section 22.2 says that they have to have a special use permit. So
yeah, well, we're actually going to work on that.
On that separately.
That separately. I think that Mr. Robinson mentioned that at the first when he started our presentation. Didn't you say that, Mr. Robinson,
yes,
that we're going to...
Right now, bed and breakfasts are permitted, but we don't have we don't have a use spelled out for Airbnbs. Technically, they're considered hotels, so they're not permitted in our residential areas.
And that could be handled on a similar with the 25% space, because a bed and breakfast is going to utilize more than, typically would utilize more than 25%, need the special use permit. But an Airbnb, hopefully, is not consistently right. using more than 20. So that could be handled in the same manner that, and you would agree, I think I heard you say, don't let me put words in your mouth, that 25% of the space, so it would work for your needs or what you're thinking if the 25% threshold, that was a home occupation and essentially allowable by right.
Yes.
And then if it exceeded that, that's a little bit more impact. That would need the special use permit.
Right. I mean, the whole point of the ordinance is to protect the interests of the community, superseding the interests of the person doing the occupation. And so I think the way you worded the ordinance now, that it protects the community, because you've talked about hazardous waste and noise and all of that. But most artists are not, they're working on a small scale. I don't know of any artists in Louisiana that are working on any kind of a large scale or having a lot of traffic coming in and out. And I'm very pleased that you eliminated that thing about the advertising, because if you're working on a small scale in Louisiana in a home occupation, you've got to be able to use the internet. It just, otherwise,
absolutely.
There's no point in doing it. So thank you for that.
Brad, she was asking the question about the fine arts thing. Aren't we kind of basically eliminating that with this? She said something about 24.2 or 4 or whatever it was that that talked about a fine art studio needing a special use permit.
But
that's
we're talking
what we're
about
here.
Intensity triggering the special use permit requirement.
Right.
And if it doesn't meet that threshold, it's a home occupation.
That sounds like a perfect
Currently, right. the ordinance says
right.
that a fine art studio requires a special use
regardless permit. Regardless of intensity.
Right, and that's what we're proposing to change.
That's what we're
And it sounds like our proposal
we're working on changing.
Works
right.
for these
that's
folks.
That's why we're actually doing this.
Yes, I know I'm so
yeah.
grateful.
And she's supporting the proposal, I think.
Yes.
And this also helps eliminate the triggering effect of an SUP for small businesses
right.
that are using accessory structures.
And I also greatly appreciate that. I know that in the leadership development, the project has been passed from our year to this year, and it's still going on. So I also would appreciate the fact that the A1 district was not the one that was requiring that special use permit for artists to have a place to work, which generally they call their studio, no matter what the size is. And I would feel that in Fluvanna County, the A1 district would be the one that would have the least impact on it, having an artist working there.
This is going to solve basically all of the problems that they're talking about and so forth like that. So. And I think that was our intent. Is there any more to add to this? Like I said, I think that we need to make sure that we add on to the end if you exceed this
right. and
amount.
And that those two could stay in. That's a special use permit in A1. If we make it clear that only if they exceed the 25% threshold, because then they become a little bit more intense.
And you want to provide for them as opposed to not providing for them.
Exactly. So we want to still give them the option to have a large studio or to do some, whatever that small home industry is. Maybe they're going to build a really big, my friends there in Suffolk with the soap making business, they ended up building a really pretty significant accessory building so they could do all that out there. Thinking about the size of their house and the size of their building, that probably exceeds 25% of the area, which is something we should allow, but now they need the special use permit, so you can make sure all that was meeting all the rules. So sounds like sounds like we've come crafted a pretty good compromise that meets everybody's needs. And
okay.
So we'll work with the county attorney's office to craft some more official language and come back with some draft text for us to finalize what we want to go forward with a public hearing.
Yeah, because they need to make sure that the language is
yeah, and
legal.
The conflicts and parts of the ordinance that maybe we didn't anticipate, things like that.
That's all I have.
Okay. So if that's all we have for now, that we will end the work session at this time, and we will come back into session at 7 o'clock for our regular meeting.
What kind of good cookies did you bring?
We'll be calling to order the Fluvanna County Planning Commission regular meeting for June the 12th. Reason something else came up on my screen. It did say June 12th, but that's what I'm looking at. So we've come to order at this time. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Now we have a moment of silence. Thank you. Next item of business is the director's report.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have a few items to report. SUP 1802, Lake Monticello Owners Association, was rejected by the Board of Supervisors by a vote of 4-1. ZTA 1804, the BZA fees, that was approved by the Board 5-0. And BZA case 1803, 2428 Richmond Road LLC, was the zoning administrator was upheld by the BZA 5-0.
Okay. Any questions? Thank you. The next item will be the first of two public comment sections. Anyone coming forward would like to speak on any issue before the county. Come forward, state your name and address, and you will be limited to 3 minutes. Seeing no one coming forward, we will end the first of two public comment sections at this time. And we will go to the minutes of the May 8, 2018 meeting. Do I have any comments about the minutes for the May 8, 2018 meeting? If not, do we have a motion to accept?
Motion to accept.
Okay, have a motion to accept from Mr. Lagacino. Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay, and I have a second from Mr. Johnson. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 5-0. No public hearing tonight, no presentations, no site development plans, no subdivisions, no unfinished business, but we do have some new business that we're going to talk about, the R3 density increase authorization that we've been discussing in our work sessions. Mr. Newman will present that.
As we had discussed, making 2.9, which is currently the maximum gross residential density, we had decided to make it so that you could have between 3 and 10 residential dwelling units per acre, subject to a special use permit. 2.9 would stay as a by right use, and anything above 2.9 up to a maximum of 10 would be required by a special use permit.
So does this match the comp plan?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. For Designs Crossroads, CPA, the max there was 10 dwelling units an acre, which is why we've gone with 10.
Yep.
So we have this tonight would allow staff to go ahead and start doing it here.
I do have a question.
Yeah.
We have general criteria for review of special use permits, but we're putting in no specific standards for a density increase?
No, not right now. It would depend, I guess, on the case-by-case basis. I believe in order to have 2.9 or more, you need to have water and sewer. We could make that a standard condition going forward, that like a central water and sewer be provided or publicly provided.
See, when you go through like a planned unit development or a cluster review, you're getting things with the increased density that are to the benefit both of the neighborhood and the community. If you have sort of general criteria for the special use permit that don't require any kind of open space specifically or public dedication of any trails or open space or anything else, you're not really customizing this increased density. You're not getting anything out of the increased density.
In this draft, page 320 that's in that package, it talks about the adequate provision of general sewer, storm drainage, and water supply.
I'm just saying if you take a 2-acre lot, and right now the most you can put on it is maybe 5 dwelling units. And under this, if you go through a special use permit process, you could put 20 dwelling units on it, potentially. But how are we looking at it from with respect to how those 10 dwelling units, they could then subdivide them into, 5,000-6,000 square foot lots, whatever it subdivides to, without a design criteria or anything else that makes it more palatable?
R3 as a planned community does require a master plan, and 25% of the master plan has to comprise open space, including things like trails and recreation facilities.
That's in a planned development.
Yes, for R3. And this would only affect R3.
But this isn't a planned development. It's a special use permit for density, but it's not a planned development.
Yes, but as part of any work done within R3 has to conform to a master plan. This would merely allow you to have more homes or a higher density within that.
So it sounds
master plan.
Like your concerns are already addressed in there. This is just allowing some increase.
They're already in the ordinance
of R3 of the open space.
So even if you subdivide it at 2.9, you have to follow all that?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, the current maximum.
It's a master plan district.
The current maximum is at 2.9. You can't exceed that.
I hear you.
So
if you so much as change a shrub on your master plan, you're going to have to go back to the board of supervisors to make a change.
Gotcha. That was my concern.
Yeah, that's the only provision that we would be changing would be that the density, everything else in regards to the master plan and water, sewer, recreation, all that stays.
So it's already got to be zoned R3.
Yes.
And you can get your 2.9 already because this allows you to get up to the 10.
Yes.
It's basically extra scrutiny.
Right.
Additional request.
Right. So you could add more conditions. We could say if you want to go up to 10 dwelling units per acre, then perhaps 30% needs to be dedicated to open space.
Right.
Or you can make other things of that nature.
Yeah, the question I would have is, are all of the requirements achievable in a 10 dwelling unit per acre development under this? Or was it built to be right for 2.9 max? I guess was.
I would say it depends on the size, right?
Depends on the size of the acres you're working with.
500 acres, you can pretty much accomplish anything. Mm-hmm. 2 acres, you probably can't do 25% of open space.
Well, then,
so you wouldn't get approved.
Well, and some ordinances, have a minimum acreage requirement for the increased density too. I mean, you can.
Lot size. There's nothing on here that I see in regards to specific lot sizes. It's just for density. Yeah.
So they can meet the criteria at 10 dwelling units per acre is the question.
Yeah. It would be smaller lots, but they can do it.
I was looking through this and looked at the draft and so forth of the ordinances with the R3 and so forth, and some of the stuff that was asked about the 25% about the water, the sewer, and stuff like that, which would apply even before a special use permit, because it does apply in the R3. So it looks like to me, unless somebody thinks that we need to be more specific on some of this, most of this has been covered. I think that we actually redid some of this back in February.
Yes.
Because it says right here that well, I had it here, and then I moved it. But anyway, it talks about the fact that the applicant shall submit a sketch plan and meet with the planning director and meet preliminary plans and so forth like that. So it says that they must establish a master plan, and it has to comply with all of those restrictions that are in R3, because that was used to be how most maximum density, right?
Yes.
And as long as one of the general criteria in the R3 is consistency with the comp plan, that's where you have your tie-in to the 10.
Yeah.
Because if you're coming in for 10 in an R3, but it's not in an area that's set up for 10, it's not consistent.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So do we have to make that motion? Is that what we're doing?
Yeah, the motion would then allow us to go ahead and hold the public hearing, and then we'd have the final draft text. I believe Mr. Payne's office is still doing the review.
So I will make that motion, I think. So if everybody's done that, I move that the Flubana County Planning Commission direct staff to initiate a zoning text amendment to amend section 22-7-8, permitted residential density. I guess to allow for an increase in the maximum gross residential density allowed by special use permit, and to schedule a future public hearing for formal planning commission consideration and recommendation to the Board of Supervisors. The public purpose of these amendments is to bring density allowances in line with the comprehensive plan.
Okay. I have a motion by Mr. Zimmer for density increase authorization. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second vote by Mrs. Costalesa. And all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 5-0. Okay. The next item on our agenda is the second of two public comments, limited to 3 minutes. Anyone wishing to come forward to speak on any issue may come forward at this time. State your name and address. Seeing no one coming forward, we will end the second of the two public comment sections. And if there's no objection by any member of the planning department or the planning commission, we will adjourn at this time. We are now adjourned at 7:12.
Just for my personal edification.
Indeed. Always.
Best of luck to you.
Thank you very
much. I seem to remember being appointed at 12.
Well, good luck with the grandkids, and good luck with being in Northern Virginia.
That's what I remember.
That'll need luck with.
The traffic. That's just what I remember.